The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine and BlackEnterprise.com. The first article is titled, In the Studio, Bernard James, the Brooklyn-based jewelry designer, invites us into his world where authenticity and community converge. If you were to take a stroll through Brooklyn, you'd notice two directions, not the north and the south, but the old and the new. Electric bicycles are installed beside skewed cobblestone paths. The Elliott Place brownstones in Clinton Hill are compressed between modern slab high-rises. The crosswalks, inns, and red oaks retain history and, by surviving, tell a story. Being born in Brooklyn is one thing, but living and blossoming here is another tale. And that's just the beginning of the story of Bernard James, fashion's beloved fine jewelry designer. The neighborhood may be changing, but James is setting out to remain faithful to his vision of Brooklyn. It's a vision based on raw talent, artistic pursuits, and most important, authenticity. His jewelry designs reflect this affirmation, integrating traditional craftsmanship with contemporary forms, spurred by an upbringing surrounded by antiques and aged houses. As I approach jewelry and design, I think a lot about how objects have a life of their own, says James. This inquisitiveness, as well as the capacity to see value in the past, is what makes his jewelry stand out. His Williamsburg studio holds the same balance of old and new. With a natural garden, he was proud to restore, a skylight beaming with overhead shine and a warmth that makes friends and customers reluctant to depart. He didn't start out in the jewelry business. His first pivotal memories of jewelry came from a kiosk at the Green Acres Mall, an iconic New York shopping center in Valley Stream, where his sister bought him a basketball pendant, and from an initial gold signet ring given to him by an aunt. Thus, his love for personal signature jewelry was planted. His appreciation of longevity and value, however, was instilled long before. My dad was very much an entrepreneur, he explains, and part of his office was an antique store. He was a collector, but one who understood the value of the old world. I think seeing the longevity of objects and seeing how rare some things had become was a big interest to me. After attending collegiate and all-boys high school in New York City, James studied business at Carnegie Mellon, then transferred to New York City University to be closer to the energy of the city. Business courses taught James the core values of running a shop, while hands-on experience gave him the confidence, connections, and inspiration he needed to strike out on his own. He started small. I wanted to dip my feet in, and I thought, what's the smallest thing I can afford and handle from a design standpoint? For him, Jewelry was the perfect medium because of the scale, precision, function, and design involved. I did it casually at first, he recalls, making pieces for friends and myself. Yearning to diversify the jewelry market, he began with a men's offering, as he had noticed how hard it was to find men's jewelry that he loved. The silhouette of the signet ring gifted to him by his aunt eventually resurfaced as the whole signet ring. In a serendipitous New York connection, James's barber introduced him to his uncle Dennis, who turned out to be an OG jewelry craftsman on 47th Street, the city's diamond district. For him, James learned the ins and outs of the diamond business and concluded that truly pleasing jewelry stems from the memories and personal stories it conjures. He made his pieces in Dennis's Crown Heights townhouse for the first couple of years, laying the foundation for what the brand is today. You can sense the level of his dedication to community in everything James does. He features close friends and loved ones in his Family Portraits campaign, which began in 2020 and spotlights individuals from various backgrounds that have inspired him and the brand. And he has trusted New York-based clientele in and outside of the fashion industry, including Christopher John Rogers, Matthew Henson, Quill Lemons, Telsha Anderson, and more. His clients become friends, and his consumers become family, earning him well-deserved awards over time, such as Essence's Best in Black Fashions 2023 Accessories Designer of the Year. He was also selected for Saks Emerging Designer Accelerator Program. To set his brand apart from the rest, he says he honed in on making things that a lot of people enjoy but are very specifically the brand, all without restricting the desire to explore individuality. That specific, meticulous notion drew a cult-like following, eager to embrace the brand. The Natural Diamond Council to take notice. I like things that last, James says. My jewelry is supposed to live with you and withstand life. Still based in Brooklyn, James continues to explore the possibilities of jewelry making with each capsule collection. The first, Pave Flora, is a nod to his growing up across the street from the Brooklyn Botanic Garden and to the effortless harmony of nature. For this collection, it's been fascinating to approach the design process with the diamond in mind, he says. He sees the collection as another turning point, one that will enable him to play and explore in his own way. As he walks through the sunny studio, he reflects that his desire to acquire a chrome chair he saw for sale in the Hamptons is perhaps an homage to his father's passion for collecting. It's akin to the subconscious emotions customers feel when they wear James's pieces. I've always been obsessed with brands that have a sense of intimacy and community, he says. The idea of being connected to someone through brand messaging is how I think of the phrase, if you know, you know. That messaging can be seen everywhere in his studio, from the fungi collection to the sculptural yet inviting burgundy Sarah, those who saw artwork on the wall. The artist created it as an ode to unrequited love and self-discovery, to the hidden backyard oasis, which is more of a conversation pit than a garden, and is the place his community gathers when visiting his studio. There's so much coming down the pike for James these days, even as he stays connected to his roots. I am always going to be inspired by Brooklyn. He says, I know I want an international brand beyond the walls of New York City, but the base of the brand will always be Brooklyn. It's so integral to my upbringing and what the brand stands for. I always want to make sure that I serve the community that I'm in. The next article is titled, Charges Dropped Against Ohio Woman Who Miscarried in Toilet. The Ohio woman was facing criminal charges after miscarrying at home on the toilet will have the charges dropped. Brittany Watts, 34, made nationwide headlines after she was indicted on charges of abuse of a corpse following an at-home miscarriage. However, on Thursday, January 11th, the Trumbull Bull County Prosecutor's Office said the grand jury declined to return an indictment, the AP reports. Watts' case sparked a national debate after she was criminally charged after miscarrying into a toilet on September 22nd. City prosecutors said she miscarried, flushed, and scooped out the toilet before leaving the home for a hair appointment and leaving the 22-week-old fetus lodged in the pipes. Watts visited Mercy Health St. Joseph Hospital twice in the days leading up to her miscarriage and was told by her doctor that she was carrying a non-viable fetus and would have to have her labor induced or risk significant risk of death. Delays and complications caused Watts to leave the hospital each time without being treated, her attorney said. Following the miscarriage, she tried to go to a hair appointment, but friends sent her to the hospital instead. A nurse called 911 to report a previously pregnant patient returned to the hospital and told them the baby's in her backyard in a bucket. The call led to an investigation and eventually criminal charges against Watts. Her attorney told the judge that Watts has no criminal record and was being demonized for something that goes on every day. An autopsy determined in utero and identified no recent injuries. The assistant prosecutor told the municipal court judge the issue wasn't how the child died, when the child died, but the fact that the baby was put into a toilet was large enough to clog up the toilet, left in the toilet, and she went on with her day. The story sparked outrage and debates around state laws governing women's reproductive health care access. The dropped charges were announced hours before a planned We Stand With Brittany rally on Warren, Ohio's Courthouse Square. The next article is titled, NYC Tenement Museum Set to Unveil New Exhibit About Black Migration in February. Calling all museum goers, on February 1st, the Tenement Museum in Lower Manhattan, New York, will open its first exhibit in several years. The mission is to amplify the stories of Black New Yorkers who made their home in Lower Manhattan's tenements in the 1860s and 1870s. Earlier this fall, the museum reopened its National Historic Landmark tenement at 97 Orchard Street on the Lower East Side of New York. Its comeback marks a unique time for the upcoming Black History Month. Visitors will get to explore the Black migrant experience in post-Civil War era New York City through a new 75-minute guided multimedia tour, A Union of Hope, 1869, according to a press release provided to Black Enterprise. The interactive exhibit, which took years in the making, is The Joseph and Rachel Moore Story and 200 Never-Before-Seen Historical Artifacts from Joseph's Free Black Community of Belvedere, New Jersey. Visitors will journey in Joseph's family footsteps to New York City. Then the tour will take visitors on a quest to a recreated version of Joseph and Rachel's rear tenement at 17 Lawrence Street. The couple lived less than a mile west of 97 Orchard Street in a neighborhood then called the 8th Ward, today's Soho. Throughout Black History Month, the museum will offer virtual programs designed to help visitors more deeply explore the story of Joseph and Rachel Moore and during the Revolutionary Civil War era. The next article is titled, Charlie Wilson to Receive Star on Hollywood Walk of Fame. R&B crooner Charlie Wilson is the latest recording artist to be in line to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Wilson, who was once the lead singer of the funk group The Gap Band, will be getting the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame later this month on January 29th at 11:30 p.m. PT. His star will be located at 6201 Hollywood Boulevard. Legendary producer Jimmy Jam Harris will be the host for the ceremony, while producing recording artist Babyface, weed connoisseur and hip-hop artist Snoop Dogg, and president and CEO of Wilson's record label, P Music Group Michael Perron, will be the speakers when the ceremony takes place. Charlie Wilson's timeless music has brought joy to millions across generations. His upcoming star ceremony will shine as a testament to his extraordinary talent, resilience, and unwavering dedication to his craft, said Walk of Fame producer Anna Martinez in a written statement. I must also add that Charlie's incredible journey from homelessness and return to show business is a true testament to his indomitable human spirit. Wilson's voice can be heard on many classic recordings from the Tulsa, Oklahoma group, The Gap Band. Over 10 years, his voice has graced such songs as Outstanding, Yearning for Your Love, Burn Rubber on Me, and Early in the Morning. Throughout his musical career as a solo artist, he has amassed 13 number one songs on the R&B charts while gaining 13 Grammy nominations, a BET Lifetime Achievement Award, a Soul Train Icon Award, a Soul Train Certified Soul Award, and a NAACP Music Makes a Difference Award. He was named Billboard's Top Adult Male R&B Artist 2 times, 2009 and 2020, and is currently Billboard's Top Adult R&B Male Artist with the most number ones of all time. Wilson will also have another reason to celebrate on January 29th. It will be his 71st birthday on the day he receives this honor. The next article is titled, 50 Cent Has 50 to 11 Ways to Get Rich Without Trying, Strikes Partnership Deal with NHL. Curtis Jackson has expanded his liquor empire onto the ice. The prominent television producer and hip-hop entrepreneur has signed his first multi-year partnership with an NHL team. Jackson, known professionally as 50 Cent, has agreed to bring his Sear Spirits to the Vegas Golden Knights. 50 already has partnership deals with NBA teams, the Houston Rockets, and the Minnesota Timberwolves for his liquor products. He also has one with an NFL team, the Houston Texans. I'm excited for Sear Spirits to close its first NHL partnership deal with Vegas Golden Knights, said 50 in a written statement. Branson Cognac and Le Chemin du Roi Champagne are championship brands for winning teams. Bill Foley and his entire team know how to win and are the perfect partners for my brand and for me to extend my charitable efforts in the Las Vegas community through the G Unity Foundation. Hockey is an exciting sport, and Las Vegas is a top market for the entertainment. I look forward to working closely with the entire Golden Knights organization. Branson Cognac and Le Chemin du Roi Champagne will be sold at the arena for this year's Stanley Cup champions for the next several seasons. The two spirits will be labeled as the official champagne and the official cognac of the Vegas Golden Knights. We are excited to welcome Curtis, 50 Cent Jackson, and Sear Spirits into the VGK family, said Carey, president and CEO of the Golden Knights. Our hope is that through this partnership, we continue to diversify the hockey fan base in efforts to grow the game for everyone. As is customary with similar deals by 50, his G Unit Foundation plans to team with the Vegas Golden Knights Foundation to serve the Las Vegas community. This news comes right after the announcement of 50 and Remy Martin agreeing to an undisclosed settlement between Branson Cognac and the French Cognac brand. There was a dispute regarding the bottle design brought by Remy Martin and Company, citing copyright infringement. The next article is titled Black Bench Chicago Prepares Black Millennials for Civic Engagement. A local organization in Chicago was founded to educate individuals interested in politics. The impact of Black Bench Chicago has been felt in only a few short years. According to the group's website, Black Bench Chicago wants to help develop leaders in the Black community who can create and carry out a plan that delivers Black Chicagoans resources. They want to assist people aged 25 to 45 who want to create political movements while serving in civic engagement, civil service, elected office, and strategic leadership from Chicago's South, East, and West sides. One of the organization's co-founders, Alexandra Sims Jones, spoke to WTTW News recently to explain the virtues of the group and the work behind it. There's a gap between generations in passing knowledge, she stated. Black Bench Chicago helps connect older generations of people involved in the civic arena with younger individuals who want to embrace the spectrum of politics. The interaction between the generations will help older people share lessons in civic engagement and organizing with their younger counterparts. It's invaluable to have a space specifically for Black millennials, Sims Jones also said. There's comfort in having a space where someone's expertise won't be judged because of implicit or explicit racism. There have been discussions from polished political leaders like Ken Bennett, who used to work for Chicago's own former President Barack Obama. There have also been past successes within the group, including people like Kennedy Bartley, the new executive director of United Working Families, and Anthony Driver, the president of Chicago's Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability. It's safe without those pressures, and it's incredibly refreshing, Sims Jones said of the organization. More information on how to join Black Bench Chicago and learn more about the organization can be found on the group's website. The next article is titled, The Women's Playbook. From football to basketball, from the boardroom to the field, these women are shaking up sports, redefining the rules, and inspiring us all. Black women have always been the blueprint, whether making moves on the hardwood or signing million-dollar deals in the boardroom. They know how to make the magic happen. The embodiment of power and grace, they dazzle us at the helm of teams like the Las Vegas Aces, which under President Nikki Fargas secured its second consecutive WNBA championship this year, or they show their expertise in the corporate world like mom-ager Felicia Jones, who inked a five-year, $260 million contract for her son, quarterback Lamar Jackson, making him the highest-paid player in NFL by average annual salary. Meet the trailblazers who are smashing through barriers and lighting the way for other women to follow. The power players who appear here possesses an innate knowledge of how to shape the world by infusing it with their tenacity and brilliance. They have not just redefined the game, but they've also become iconic leaders, role models, and catalysts for change. From football courts that pulse with energy to sprawling fields of dreams, from the grand stages of the Olympics to the hallowed halls of sports management, these women are rewriting the rule book and making the realm of sports better each day. For our Essence Black Women in Sports Leadership list, we have highlighted the MVPs who have reinvented the game in ways that are anything but ordinary. Kiki Baker Barnes, PhD, Commissioner of the Gulf Coast Athletic Conference, age 48, current city, New Orleans, leading the way in advancing collegiate sports programs. Baker Barnes' contributions have earned her recognition from the New Orleans Pelicans and helped her win the prestigious Under Armour Athletic Director of the Year award in 2019. She first stepped into her current role in 2019, working as an interim commissioner. She assumed the title officially in 2022, becoming the first African-American female commissioner. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.